Hello, I'm Vanton Quinlevin, CEO of Futuro Health, welcoming you to Workforce RX, where I interview leaders and innovators for insights into creating a future-ready workforce. Today, I'm happy to welcome Julian Alcid and Caitlin Lemoyne to the podcast. They both are nationally recognized experts in education and workforce development. Julian and Caitlin have combined their decades of experience in the field to create Workforces, a consulting firm that advises C-suite leaders and organizations on bridging a gap between education and industry and optimizing for the future of work and learning. They are also co-hosts of the bi-weekly podcast, Workforces, on which I was a recent guest. That was a lot of fun. And I'm looking forward to continuing our discussion about bringing innovation to the field. Thanks very much for joining us today, both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having us, yes.
Absolutely. Well, what brought the two of you together to found Workforces, and how do you describe its mission? Maybe we could start with you, Caitlin.
That sounds great. Thanks, Vaughn. It's great to see you. We really appreciated having you on our podcast a few weeks ago, and it's great to be with you here today. So to give a bit of background on ourselves, so Julian and I met well over a decade ago now, actually at Southern New Hampshire University, where we both were working on what was a competency-based education model called College for America. Julian was working on the more partnership and policy side of the house, and I was brought on to design curriculum for the competency-based model. And we had met at that point in time and then went off on our separate paths for many years and then came back together a few years ago, realizing we had, you know, very complementary skill sets that really cover the full spectrum of partnership, policy, program, and practice. And so we're excited to bring that kind of holistic set of skills to what we now have as Workforces.
Julian, anything to add?
Yeah, what would I add? So Caitlin and I really share a belief that there are sort of persistent and critical gaps between education and industry that hinder economic advancement for individuals, for the country, for the world. And we founded Workforces to bridge those gaps. And so the consulting we provide is really very sort of tailored services around strategy and implementation. And basically, we take on really complex assignments that allow us to leverage our expertise to address challenges that our clients just don't have the time or capacity to do given their day jobs. This is, you know, as you know, really hard work. And the podcast grew out of our early consulting work together. We actually went on a listening tour to hear from innovators in the field. And we started turning to one another after each meeting and said, like, we really should be recording these conversations. And literally, that's how we started. And it's taken on a life of its own. We just had our 50th episode.
Well, congratulations on the 50th episode. You know, Julian, I think we first connected in your role in College for America. I'm curious how you've tracked the competency-based education movement. And, you know, now that you have some time in the kind of the rear window, what are your thoughts on its momentum?
It's really interesting. When Caitlin and I worked at College for America, I mean, it was, you know, it was an early proof of concept in the field. And, you know, it still holds water. And I think that what's happened is people have come to realize that, you know, we need alternative ways of learning and that the notion of competency-based, project-based, demonstrating mastery of skills, you know, it's caught on. And, you know, we have other early starters, but now many, many groups getting into the act. And we think we're going to be seeing more and more of it. You know, it's still a bit upstream because that's not what the main of academics and education is built around, still the traditional seat time models. But I think we're seeing it evolve pretty quickly. I don't know, Caitlin, I'm actually curious to hear your take on this one.
I mean, I would say, yeah, I think there's been a movement, right, toward everything from skills-based hiring to more of an emphasis on skills when thinking about curriculum and program design that has been really exciting to see over the last decade. And I think there's so much great momentum there, especially as we see and think about how to de-silo and, like, speak more effectively across education and industry. And I think the competency or skills-based end of that is so critical, right? Because it really gets down to what is it we're looking for learners to know and be able to do and articulate that really clearly. And I think in industry, employers are looking for something similar, right? They also want to be very clear about what they're looking for employees to know and be able to do in their jobs.
Well, speaking about the intersection of education and industry, I mean, what are you observing to have remained consistent? And what has changed when it comes to preparing the next generation of learners and workers?
How about if I start on the what's consistent?
Go for it.
Caitlin, help me out. So I would say there are three things that pop to mind for me. The first is that really since I've been in workforce now, it's like 35 years, I would say that part of what got me into it was that it became clear that there was a rising skill demand and that people needed some form of post-secondary educational attainment to advance and earn a decent wage. And I think that we've seen commitment there that has persisted, and as well as to lifelong learning more broadly. You know, I think it's a work in progress, but that rising skill demand is definitely one. I'd also say that the impact of technology as kind of a constant undercurrent in the work, you know, from like the early days of online and MOOCs to now, you know, kind of rapid and completely upending disruption that we're seeing with AI. And then the other is really the challenge of the need for alignment, that to do this work requires education and industry to work together. And that remains, you know, a really challenging enterprise.
And what about what's different?
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to jump in on that with some of the changes we've seen. I think, you know, one thing that's stuck out is that workforce development for a long time felt kind of peripheral to education. And I think workforce development more now than ever is more the center of things. Some time ago, we wrote a blog piece that was talking about, is it workforce development? Is it talent development, right? Like there's this spectrum. And I think it's really been interesting to see over the years that workforce development is such an integral part of the education landscape. I think it's been also interesting to see some of the connections that are happening within education itself, right, like between K-12 and higher ed, and thinking about the narrowing of gap across just educational institutions, when we think about, you know, movements toward more like dual enrollment type offerings as one example, and then the closing of silos and narrowing across education and industry, especially when we see, you know, everything that's happening in the apprenticeship space, a drive toward more work-based learning opportunities. So it's been really exciting to see how all of these different stakeholder groups are beginning to come together and really coordinate across their efforts. And then the other thing I'd say is that I think that colleges and universities are doing a lot of work upfront to say, you know, what are the rising needs of industry? What do we see kind of around the corner? And how can we begin to think and design for programs and initiatives that really meet those needs? And conduct a landscape analysis in advance, right? Rather than waiting for like, oh, an employer saying they need this to be more, you're really looking around the corner.
Well, Caitlin, on your first point, I may be dating myself, you know, your point about workforce development is no longer peripheral. I remember in my early years, business and industry was supposed to be kept arm's length from education. You know, the farther, the better, right? Mm-hmm. So it's certainly the pendulum has swung on that. And yet it's not enough. It's not even moving at the pace of business. It's like moving the pace of need. And it's just so rapid. It's hard for our institutions to keep up. So you talked a little bit about your clients needing to look around the corner. I was wondering if you could maybe spotlight some work that you're doing or some of the things that you're seeing around the corner.
Yeah, let's think. What are we seeing around the corner? Well, we are seeing much more purposeful efforts to build scalable initiatives that are really region-wide and that are not so much, just, you know, I think that part of the issue with workforce fund was, you know, it was also very boutique. And that, I mean, that was part of it, right? It wasn't running the show. It was always seen as like, yeah, sure, peripheral. Employers would ditch it as soon as their budgets went down and colleges didn't take it too seriously. We're now seeing, you know, like major initiatives where, you know, we're working with colleges that are building and leading region-wide initiatives that involve bringing together not just one, but multiple employers and multiple funders, and are looking at various populations and how can we build pipelines and pathways that are both, you know, going to fill jobs today and jobs in the future and create bridge programs for people who need to brush up on skills before they can get into these jobs. So to me, that's one and really a new kind of relationship between the employers and the educators, where this isn't just about, you know, come in every 6 months and sit on your advisory committee or whatever and have rubber chicken and then go home. It's much more about coming together as needed to solve problems and to tweak and to iterate.
Do you think some of those relationships will persist even without the incentives, for example, the federal monies, if they no longer flow in that direction? Do you think those conversations, those collaborations will persist?
Great question. I mean, it's, you know, I always felt that where there's an economic demand, the work will happen and there'll be a market for it. You know, it never really was a lot of money to begin with, honestly. But yeah, I think, of course, it'll definitely hurt collaborations where the money has served as kind of a catalyst as we see less money.
Well, let's hope that all the collaborations that have been seeded in past years continue on, because no one stakeholder has all the resources or the solution, right?
Right.
Now, you both talk about workforces taking a human-centered approach that prioritizes stakeholder needs. I have a feeling I have some insights into what you talk about just from lived experience, but explain what that looks like when you are working with clients.
Sure. So, I mean, it looks like a few different things. You know, I guess I would say at the outset, we prioritize stakeholder needs and experiences in our process. So whether we're thinking about our clients, the learners they're seeking to reach, industry partners, you know, we recognize we're often working at the nexus of multiple stakeholders and needing to be very aware, acutely aware of their needs. What this looks like takes a few different forms. One, we use a flexible engagement model with our clients. So we really try to meet people where they are, right? And sometimes a client might want help with an initiative start to finish. Like, let's think through everything from, you know, planning to strategy to implementation, or we're really looking for support with one discrete component that we just don't have the capacity for. We engage at various levels. We're also really responsive to just the external environment. We recognize we're, you know, we're at a moment where there's a lot of different moving parts and need to be responsive to economic and resource and human considerations as part of that. And frankly, there's the internal constraints and moving pieces as well, right? And so it's a bit of, at a tactical level, putting together a project plan, recognizing things change and working with a client to adjust and be real in how we go about both planning for designing and implementing projects and initiatives. So, but it really does come down to getting to know our stakeholders really well and putting that at the center of the process.
I know these are complicated processes with a lot of stakeholders usually, right?
Yeah.
I say in my book, but I also said on your podcast, and many of our listeners know, workforce development is a team sport, not an individual sport.
Right.
Totally.
And when the team comes together, sometimes they flail around a lot, which is very frustrating to the industry stakeholders who come forward and they just want to have the results. They want the talent. I wonder if maybe you have some stories to share about either your approach to building or maintaining this cross partnership, or maybe some horror stories.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll hold the horror stories for the Halloween edition, maybe. But there are certain elements that we do find again and again that kind of help to promote the team sport, shall we say. They begin with really being clear about how a project or an initiative fits within the strategy of the different stakeholders. Everyone's got to be very clear about how does it work for them and what are they, you know, what are they bringing to the table and what do they want to take away? And so much of this is in the details here. Time commitments have to be very clear when it comes to project engagement, both for short-term and long-term. The language used has to be clear so it can connect with audiences. I mean, you know, people right now, there's like a whole division between, you know, employers talking about skills and skills-based hiring and educators talking more about competencies. And, you know, it's kind of like, how do we reconcile this so we can be clear about what everyone means? And so our approach really does center on this kind of building of relationships and baking these relationships into institutions involve. Because another huge issue is you can build a partnership, and if that one person who's been at the table goes away, so often the partnership falls down. And I would say that's where the biggest horror stories I've experienced have happened, is when it really has not been institutionalized. So those are, you know, a few examples of how we believe, you know, you can build a team sport where there's a field to keep coming back to and playing around.
Yeah, and I would say consistent communication is just another piece that's so key, right? Like that everyone has a clear understanding of what's being communicated and when, and you know, just having that regular exchange of ideas, exchange of perspectives, because I think sometimes when engagements go on for a long period of time, it can be easy for one stakeholder to fall off or, you know, kind of lose traction, and just making sure that everyone is continually engaged in a new project or a long-standing project to ensure consistent alignment.
This question of continuity is really interesting because unlike other areas where maybe you can finish something in a quarter and be done, workforce development is sort of a lot of earned trust, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where commitments are made, they're delivered upon, and then, you know, the trust is the engine for these partnerships. This is sort of the curious question about, does it happen because you have a charismatic leader? And then if the charismatic leader goes away, then does everything sunset? I wonder if you could talk a little bit about some best practices you've seen to ensure that the work goes on, the commitment goes on beyond that charismatic leader or that initial set of players, or, you know, the reason why people came together in the first place. Because you often need kind of a neutral, trusted party as the catalyst to bring everybody together. But then what happens if that person's no longer there?
Yeah, and it really goes to the heart of a lot of what we do, because so often we're hired by that charismatic leader or someone on their team, frankly, who's charismatic but isn't necessarily running everything but has a vision. But the charismatic leader, I think so often the challenge is that, number one, that they tend to leave more because they're in more political, higher level positions, they're more susceptible to change, and they move on. They have a tendency more to move on. But the challenge, and where I think we get very involved, is connecting that work and grounding that work with their teams, with the other leaders they work with, and with the teams of those leaders. So really, you're talking about engaging stakeholders kind of up and down the line. And as I said before, don't want to sound like a broken record, it's really about baking this into processes that can then live beyond the life of that charismatic leader. So when the next charismatic leader comes in, they're not just going to see this as some political thing that was done by their predecessor, but it's like, this is what we do, you know, and we're really good at this. And now how can I bring this to the next level? But that does require, I think your point, Vaughn, about having someone who can really push this along is really key. And I think the other piece is that you've got to really figure out the right roles for the different actors involved, because so much of this varies from place to place. You may have the college leading here and the employer leading there.
Right. Well, and I think the other piece is embedding, Julian, I think this was part of what you were saying as well, but just embedding the work within a broader strategy, right? Like, it doesn't exist as a sidebar. It's like, this is part of the strategy we have in place, and this is why it's important, and here's how we're going to measure it and monitor it. And I think that can help as well, both on the college or university or educator side and on the employer side, right? I think that can help to bridge the gap around the commitment to the initiative itself.
Well, I've been looking forward to asking you this question. You talked about the fact that you've done 50 episodes of your Workforces podcast. For each of you, what stands out as really cutting edge idea or project that you learned about from one of your guests?
Wow. Maybe I'll throw one out there, Caitlin. It's more about themes, I would say, that have stood out. And one that we talk a lot about is the importance of durable and human skills. And as AI emerged especially, this is just like burst to the fore. And so we had a conversation with our former boss, Paul LeBlanc, who was president at Southern University, and with others recently, with Audrey Patinow from Ripple Match and Dan Gonzalez with District C, which works with schools. And they're all focused on this notion of, look, we need people who have skills that are going to endure and that are of a higher order who will be able to work with AI.
Good one. What about you, Caitlin?
I think another theme that has emerged is, you know, a close look at various scalable approaches. So we have had a number of conversations with leaders who are at various stages of scaling their organizations and their offerings. And it's been fascinating to learn kind of what gets an organization from point A to point B, and the lessons in scale along the way. But, you know, we had an interesting conversation with the leaders of Merit America about their work. And Yvonne, actually, you know, the conversation we had with you, right? Like how to think really at scale about how do we address some of these really big talent gaps and talent needs. And so I think as we think about all the different themes that have come out from the podcast, I mean, I would say the scalable approach is what's interesting about it is it's like there's a lot of mini lessons to learn along the way. And sometimes it's those moments of, wait, this didn't quite work, but how could we try it differently? And let's try again. And how can we continue to iterate and kind of, and, you know, I guess have like a rapid feedback loop. So a few different, I guess, takeaways from me there, but, you know, many lessons learned around how to scale effectively. And especially, frankly, to tie back to the other theme Julian mentioned, you know, technology has certainly played a role in that, right? And the ability to scale in some cases more and more quickly. So it's been exciting to hear many stories.
And then on the flip side, did you hear about some approaches that maybe perhaps are no longer working or that we should move on from as a sector?
I mean, I think one key thing we've heard kind of as a, again, a recurring theme is that experiential learning opportunities for learners need to be happening much earlier, right? Grounding learners in the skills that they are going to need kind of across the spectrum of their lives matters, and it matters starting fairly young. We had a conversation with Jean Eddy from American Student Assistance some time ago, where we really focused on starting in the middle school years. What does it look like to begin to think in this way? And then we had a conversation with the leaders of RIPEN around what does it look like to build experiential learning opportunities for everyone? And I believe they're on your podcast as well, Vaughn. And I think, you know, it's clear that it's not so much about what's not working, but just what needs to be happening more of the time and for more and more people, right? How do we make some of these opportunities more universally accessible so that people are gaining the skills they need earlier on in their educational experiences so they're prepared for their careers and professional journeys? Julian, I don't know what else you'd add, but.
Well, one that kind of comes to mind for me is, and maybe it's really two that are related, from our conversation with Matt Siegelman from Burning Glass Institute. One is that it's very clear that we need to move away from the train and pray models, that, you know, the notion of upfront industry validation and, you know, trying to stay on top of the labor market shifts is key. And now with skills sets just shifting as we speak, we really need to be much, much more nimble and responsive with respect to the solutions that we develop.
Well, why don't we close by giving you both the forum to answer this question. What makes you optimistic about the future of workforce development?
Between our podcast and our consulting, definitely we're excited about the innovative work that's happening out there. And the future is going to require more innovation and more thinking about how we can best educate, because there's so much unknown and it's all happening so rapidly. I guess another one I'll put out there is we're very happy to see a lot of de-siloing at multiple levels. People are talking about it, and they really never have seriously before, but they're actually also trying to do it at the state level. The feds are talking about it, and locally. So that's pretty huge.
Yeah, and I would say in addition to that, you know, I think an undercurrent of all of our work, right, as we've said, is this focus on AI and where is the future taking us? And I think what that has led to is a spotlight on what are the most critical skills and what is it that people are going to need to know and be able to do in the future of work, and to have that be a focus of just of kind of like, I think across industries and across the landscape, makes the future of workforce development very, very exciting, because as much as it's a super complex environment to be working in and one that is experiencing a lot of change and evolution, it also means there's more and more innovation and attention being given to that space, which is pretty invigorating as a place to be working.
Well, Caitlin and Julian, it was such a joy to have you both on this podcast today. I'm sure our learners learned a lot, just like I did.
Well, thank you so much for having us, Vaughn. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
I'm Vaughn Tone Quinlivan with Futuro Health. Thanks for checking out this episode of Workforce RX. I hope you will join us again as we continue to explore how to create a future-focused workforce in America.